This is Stuart Moxham of The Gist, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492. To leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-88.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio. If you retransmit audio news through a repeater, listen for the Morse code K character, followed by 4 seconds of silence. That's your cue to stop transmitting so that your repeater timer can reset.
I'm Carla Pereira, KC1HSX, and these are our stories for Friday, November 30th. FT8 operators will be interested to know that a fifth candidate release, or beta version, of WSJT-X 2.0 software is available for download and use by beta testers. WSJT-X developer Joe Taylor, K1JT, says WSJT-X 2.0/RC5 is stable, works well, and fixes known problems in Release Candidate 4, the most recent beta version. On November 26th, Taylor said, quote, "It is likely that the general availability release of WSJT-X 2.0, scheduled for 2 weeks from today, will be nearly identical to RC5, unquote. The first dedicated FT8 contest, the FT8 Roundup, is set for the December 1st and 2nd weekend. In the brand new operating event, radio amateurs worldwide will contact and exchange information with other amateurs using FT8 on 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. Any station may work any other station. The exchange is signal report and state or province for U.S. and Canadian participants. Taylor also noted that the ARRL RIDI Roundup, January 5th and 6th, will, for the first time, permit the use of FT8 as well as traditional RIDI. Look for Taylor's article explaining the use of FT8 in the RIDI Roundup in the January issue of QST Magazine. On November 7th, the FCC Enforcement Bureau issued a Notice of Unlicensed Operation to technician licensee Daryl Thomas, KE6MWS, of Carmichael, California, for allegedly operating an unlicensed FM radio station. On October 10, 2018, an Enforcement Bureau agent from the FCC San Francisco office responded to a complaint of an unlicensed FM station operating on 95.7 MHz in Carmichael. The agent confirmed by direction-finding techniques that a signal on 95.7 MHz was emanating from a residence, and Thomas subsequently admitted that he was the operator of this station, the FCC said in the notice. The agent measured the field strength of the signal and found that it exceeded the maximum permitted level of 250 microvolts per meter at 3 meters, as established under FCC Part 15 rules. The FCC has rejected a petition for reconsideration that AMSAT filed 14 years ago, seeking to exempt amateur radio satellites from the FCC's satellite orbital debris mitigation requirements. The Commission took the opportunity in a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking and Order on Reconsideration, released on November 19th, that revisits its orbital debris rules for the first time since their adoption in 2004. Among other things, AMSAT had argued at the time of its petition that applying the orbital debris requirements to amateur radio satellites would be cost prohibitive, and that the FCC had not indicated what constitutes an acceptable orbital debris mitigation plan. Acknowledging that time has made some of AMSAT's arguments moot, the FCC said the costs involved with modification to comply with post-mission disposal requirements are justified when balanced against the public interest in mitigating orbital debris. The FCC said it determined that closer adherence to the disposal methods described in the rules was warranted in order to limit the growth of orbital debris in low Earth orbit. The FCC also said that in the years since the FCC issued its orbital debris order, numerous licensees, including amateur satellites operating in low Earth orbit, have successfully satisfied our orbital debris mitigation requirements. The Radio and TV Correspondents Association has honored Cox Media Group Senior Washington Correspondent Jamie Dupree, NS3T, with its 2018 Career Achievement Award for Distinguished Reporting on Congress. Dupree received the award during the RTCA annual dinner earlier this month, and the presentation was broadcast nationwide on C-SPAN 2. The Career Achievement Award for Distinguished Reporting on Congress honors a Capitol Hill broadcaster who represents career achievement and dedication to congressional coverage. Dupree's ability to speak was severely impaired in 2016 by a rare disorder, but a technological solution returned his voice to the airwaves. As the 54-year-old contester and Potomac Valley Radio Club member explained in a blog post last June, a Scottish company, Sarah Proc, sifted through years of Dupree's archived audio and built a voice for him, which he calls Jamie Dupree 2.0, that allows him to file radio reports again in a computer-generated voice. Dupree has been a radio broadcaster since 1983. Jack Tiley, AD7FO of Spokane Valley, Washington, has been appointed as the new ARRL Eastern Washington Section Manager starting on January 1, 2019. Tiley will fulfill the unexpired term of office that Mark Tharp, KB7HDX, will vacate following his election as Northwestern Division Vice Director.
And now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
Finally, and we hope this is the final delay, Fox One Cliff is scheduled to launch on Sunday, December 2nd at 18:31 and 47 seconds UTC. The rocket is also carrying Funcube on ESEO, JY1SAT, K2SAT, and XSEED-SAT. AMSAT is looking forward to the third of four Fox satellites reaching orbit soon so operational testing can begin. In case you missed it, Funcube 1 launched 5 years ago, celebrating its birthday on November 21st. Now more of the Funcube family is going into orbit. ESEO is Funcube 4, and JY1SAT is Funcube 6. Funcube is a design by volunteers in the UK and the Netherlands. Keep your eye on this launch. A lot will be going on after satellite deployment. Oscar numbers are rapidly approaching number 100. The latest Oscar number is LO94. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and this is the ARRL Audio News Propagation Forecast for Friday, November 30th. The sun is spotless, and the solar flux index has drifted down to about 68, but propagation remains pretty good on 160 through 40 meters. Even during a solar minimum, the lower bands remain in decent shape. For those of you who can operate on 160 meters, you'll reap the benefits during the ARRL 160-meter contest that's coming up this weekend. Now, next weekend, December 8th and 9th, is the ARRL 10-meter contest. The long-range forecast isn't promising for this event, as you would imagine, but don't forget that 10 meters can produce surprises. As with all the so-called dead bands, 10 meters has a tendency to open during contests. Funny how that works. On VHF and UHF, this is the beginning of the winter sporadic E season. We've received a few reports already from FT8 operators that 6 meters has been popping open, particularly in the late morning and early afternoon.
And that concludes ARRL Audio News for this week. Our thanks to all contributors to this week's report. ARRL Audio News is produced by the American Radio Relay League, the National Association for Amateur Radio. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment about ARRL Audio News, email us at audionews@arrl.org. This program is copyright ARRL, all rights reserved. 73, and thanks for listening.
Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, December the 3rd, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Trump dials back tariffs on China. Also on the Monday rundown, Big Pharma's lame duck congressional move drawing pushback. Plus, we will tell you how funds are now flowing to restore native Tennessee trout. Topping our news, President Donald Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping have pressed pause on the months-long escalation of their ongoing trade dispute. That from the Huffington Post. They report the White House announced a ceasefire following a two-hour dinner on Saturday between Trump and Xi, held on the sidelines at the G20 summit in Argentina. The U.S. has agreed to delay by 90 days a planned increase in tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese imports. That's so the two nations have time to iron out their trade differences, or at least attempt to do so, according to the White House. The pharmaceutical industry is making a last-minute push in the Congress to roll back mandated discounts for drugs distributed through Medicare Part D. But Eric Gladys reports senior advocates are pushing back.
Industry groups are lobbying Congress to change a measure passed in February that was designed to bridge a coverage gap for seniors. AARP has sent a letter to congressional leaders and launched a national ad campaign opposing the move. And Bob Murphy with AARP Colorado is urging the state's 685,000 members to contact their elected representatives.
Let's not break a deal that was made just a few months ago for the purposes of giving Big Pharma a bailout on the backs of older Americans who need life-saving prescription drugs.
Congress increased the discount on name brand drugs from 50% to 70% during a lapse in Medicare coverage known as a donut hole. The move is projected to save seniors $1.3 billion in out-of-pocket costs in 2019. Industry groups claim the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018 went too far and want insurance companies, whose share of drug costs also was reduced, to pay more.
According to the Center for Responsive Politics, the pharmaceutical industry has invested more than $20 million in lobbying in 2018. Meantime, Bloomberg News says industry leaders increased their lobbying efforts by at least 30% in the third quarter of this year. Controversial legislation in the state of Ohio, known as the Pastor Protection Act, making its way closer to the governor's desk. Mary Sherman provides some perspective.
A Senate committee could schedule a vote this week on House Bill 36, which protects the right of religious clergy to refuse to perform weddings that violate their religious beliefs. The bill's sponsor, Republican Nino Vitale, has said the bill is meant to protect religious freedom and prevent tension in lawsuits regarding same-sex marriage. However, Grant Stancliffe with Equality Ohio explains these protections are already established in the law.
We don't want to force any pastor or clergy to do anything. You know, marriage is a civil right, but it's also, for many, a sacred right. And we don't want to force anybody to go against their beliefs in any fashion.
Stancliffe says there are no lawsuits or threats of litigation against clergy about these established rights. Three Senate committee hearings were held last week on HB 36, which was passed by the House in June.
That bill would also allow religious societies to deny public accommodations for weddings to couples based on their religious beliefs. Advocates say it's not just LGBTQ couples, but also interfaith or interracial couples that could face discrimination. The town of Jackman has joined a growing number of places and organizations that oppose the proposed Central Maine Power Transmission Line, but public pressure may not be the biggest problem that CMP faces moving forward.
The transmission line, known as the New England Clean Energy Connect, would carry hydropower generated in Quebec to Massachusetts through western Maine. Dylan Voorhees with the Natural Resources Council of Maine says Jackman's vote against the power line symbolizes a larger movement.
This isn't just about one town or another town. It's really about impacts on a broad region. This is an unfragmented piece of forest land all across Somerset County and Franklin counties.
Backers of the project see hydropower as renewable energy and say it would bring lower electricity bills to Massachusetts and more jobs and property tax revenue to western Maine. The NRC of Maine argues it would affect more than 50 miles of forest land and divert power from one market to another, rather than create more renewable energy. I'm Laura Ross-Brautelum reporting.
And finally, Antoinette Kerr tells us protecting the native brook trout population has been an upstream battle for Tennessee conservation groups, but things are looking up at year's end.
The Tennessee Aquarium has just received the largest single donation since it began seeking financial support for its brook trout restoration project. The goal is to preserve this indigenous fish that has been reduced to 15% of its historic range. Tom Benson with the Tennessee Aquarium explains why the southern Appalachian brook trout is the focus.
Because of deforestation, poor land management practices in the past, and the introduction of brown and rainbow trouts into their streams, their numbers have really declined over the last 50 years or so.
Benson says the donation of more than $11,000 from the nonprofit group Trout Unlimited will go a long way in helping to preserve the native brook trout. The restoration project encompasses every stage of its life cycle, including hatching and re-releasing fish into ancestral streams.
The Tennessee Aquarium Conservation Institute says it is slowly making headway toward returning the brook trout to regional mountain streams from which it had all but disappeared. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC, and you're listening to the Congressional Report for New York's 19th District. For news about Representative John Faso, current Republican from Kinderhook who holds the position, and Antonio Delgado, the congressperson-elect. Currently, the 538.com website reports that Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 89.2% of the time, the same as before the election.
Dan Friedman is reporting for the Albany Times-Union that Antonio Delgado is ready for his January 3rd swearing-in, when the 41-year-old Democrat takes over representing New York's 19th Congressional District from Republican John Faso. He said last week, and I quote, "I'm ready to go," end quote. He attended an orientation in Washington, D.C. last week and is renting an apartment there for the week's Congress is in session. Chris Gibson, who represented the 19th District from 2012 to 2016 and slept in his office on an Army cot, said, and I quote, I fully realize that many Delgado supporters don't like Trump, and many Trump voters didn't support Delgado. But I hope for the good of the district and the nation that these two leaders find a way to put aside differences and work together on the many pressing issues of our time, end quote. Delgado realizes he's going into a House controlled by Democrats, but with the Senate and executive branch run by Republicans. Delgado said, and I quote, "I have to look at things I can control, and what I can control is my level of engagement with constituents so that they can feel they can reach out and touch me," end quote. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union.
Dan Friedman reports in the Albany Times-Union that Representative John Faso says that what Donald Trump said about the murder of an American journalist was, quote, "better left unsaid," unquote. Quote, "maybe he did and maybe he didn't," unquote, Trump said November 20th about whether Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia ordered the killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Faso says the president, quote, "unnecessarily downplays the likely involvement of Saudi leadership in this appalling crime. As such, much of his statement would have been better left unsaid," unquote. But Faso, a Republican from Kinderhook, said the United States, quote, "has strategic reasons to stay involved diplomatically and militarily with Saudi Arabia. The murder of Mr. Khashoggi has, however, altered our relationship for the foreseeable future," unquote. Representative-elect Antonio Delgado had a much stronger assessment, quote, "remaining a moral leader on the world stage and true to our commitment to advancing democracy requires a foreign policy grounded in our values," unquote, Delgado wrote on Twitter. Quote, "the current approach appears purely transactional and devoid of respect for basic human rights. Simply put, it is un-American," unquote. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union.
David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. Outgoing Republican U.S. Representative John Faso is telling the federal government he does not want federal funds to be, and I quote, "wasted," end quote, on projects where he believes the state's scaffold law is driving up costs. In a letter to U.S. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, Faso says that federal funds should be awarded only with a requirement that the parties, and I quote, "agree to utilize a comparative negligence standard," end quote, for injuries on a project. New York's 133-year-old law imposes an, and I quote, "absolute liability," end quote, standard for workplace injuries caused by falls, and it is the only state in the country that imposes that standard in gravity-related injury cases. Faso estimates the scaffold law accounted for $200 million in the final bill to replace the Tappan Zee Bridge. His argument is based on the idea that the federal government can preempt state law with conditional contracts, which he believes will prove more economical. Faso wrote, and I quote, "I firmly believe that this action would lead to reduced construction costs within New York and result in significant savings to federal taxpayers," end quote. Read the full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. The Daily Freeman reports that Representative-elect Antonio Delgado voted November 28th for Nancy Pelosi to become Speaker of the House of Representatives when Democrats take control of the chamber in January. In a secret caucus vote November 28th, 203 Democrats, including Delgado, backed Pelosi with 32 no votes and 3 blank ballots. For Pelosi to become Speaker, she will need 218 votes on January 3rd. Delgado only committed to the former speaker as the vote neared. Delgado wrote just before the vote, and I quote, "I've recently met with leader Nancy Pelosi and discussed crucial issues facing upstate New York and how they can be addressed in the 116th Congress. During the discussion, she committed to help me lead the effort within the House to bring broadband access to our rural communities and help places like Hoosick Falls and Petersburg, which have been forced to endure a crisis of contaminated water. We also agreed on the need to prioritize legislation from the bipartisan heroin task force that will help family members cover treatment costs and better fund prevention in rural communities, and we discussed me taking a leadership role in this task force. I also expressed that I will work tirelessly to ensure that the people of upstate New York have access to quality, affordable health care that is accessible to everyone. Based on our conversation and her commitment to prioritize issues critically important to the district, I have decided to support Leader Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House," end quote. Democrat from Rhinebeck takes over for Kinderhook Republican John Faso after a November 6 election victory in New York's 19th Congressional District. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Next, we have these reports.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio WGXC.
If you can't make your local town meetings but want to attend, WGXC can help. Currently, local volunteers make recordings and live web streams of the Catskill Town Meetings, the Hudson Common Council Meetings, and the Columbia County Board of Supervisor Meetings. If you miss the live web streams, volunteers post recordings of these meetings as soon as possible at WGXC.org on the newsroom page and in the audio archives. If you're going to local meetings and you have a phone in your pocket, you can help too. Email info@wgxc.org and WGXC will help you share recordings of local meetings and events. You can also use the free WGXC app, available in the App Store, to do your own live webcast from local events. Contact info@wgxc.org for more information about how you can help share valuable local information about your community with your friends and neighbors. Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio. If you retransmit audio news through a repeater, listen for the Morse code K character, followed by 4 seconds of silence. That's your cue to stop transmitting so that your repeater timer can reset.
I'm Carla Pereira, KC1HSX, and these are our stories for Friday, November 30th. FT8 operators will be interested to know that a fifth candidate release, or beta version, of WSJT-X 2.0 software is available for download and use by beta testers. WSJT-X developer Joe Taylor, K1JT, says WSJT-X 2.0/RC5 is stable, works well, and fixes known problems in Release Candidate 4, the most recent beta version. On November 26th, Taylor said, quote, "It is likely that a general availability release of WSJT-X 2.0, scheduled for 2 weeks from today, will be nearly identical to RC5, unquote. The first dedicated FT8 contest, the FT8 Roundup, is set for the December 1st and 2nd weekend. In the brand new operating event, radio amateurs worldwide will contact and exchange information with other amateurs using FT8 on 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. Any station may work any other station. The exchange is signal report and state or province for U.S. and Canadian participants. Taylor also noted that the ARRL RIDI Roundup, January 5th and 6th, will...
From Athens. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Matt Tombers of Claverick, New York. Sustaining supporters like Matt are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
Wavefarm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Saugerties band The Rough Shapes played their surf rock December 1st at High Low in Catskill, and here's what the opening song sounded like.
We did a record a couple of years ago with our friend Brian Goss. This is one of those songs from that record.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Next, we have these reports.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Susan Zemet, who is the executive director of the Hunger Action Network of New York State. Obviously, the holiday season is when many New Yorkers begin to think about the issue of hunger. But, you know, Susan, how is the not only issue of hunger in New York, but how is it, you know, sort of changing over time?
Well, unfortunately, I don't know if it's really changed for the positive. If you think about when the emergency feeding programs were first started all these years ago, they were there to take care of a problem, you know, and create emergency feeding programs. So when people had emergencies, they would go to a pantry and there would be food for them. However, here it is all these years later, and all of a sudden the food pantries and the food banks and the anti-hunger movement is a big business for all intents and purposes. I mean, you've got a lot of food banks getting a lot of money, giving out a lot of food. And so what started off as emergency feeding programs is now almost like the supermarket for the low income and hungry. And, you know, that's not a good situation at all. And part of the reason, I would say, which is really the value of Hunger Action Network, is the fact that it's like you have to get to the root cause of the problem. Why are people hungry in the first place? And how do we solve the problem? You know, from Hunger Action Network's perspective, we have to make sure people are eating while we solve the problem. So therefore, we work to get more money for the, you know, the emergency feeding programs. But at the end of the day, the goal is really to get people not to have to be hungry in the first place. So what I can say is that I know from a lot of the emergency feeding programs that are on the ground, their lines are getting longer and longer, and more people are coming to their doors. So obviously, the problem is not getting better. The problem is getting worse, and we as a country have to do something about that.
So what are some of the root causes of hunger, and how would you solve them?
Well, you know, what I've learned since I came into this field a couple of years back was that basically what happens is people first pay for their housing because they don't want to be on the street. After they pay for their housing, they pay for their heat because they don't want to freeze if they live in the Northeast. If they're fortunate enough to have health care, they pay for that, which usually leaves them with very little money for food. That's the most expendable thing is the food because they can go to a pantry. And, you know, and then simultaneously, you know, if there's like, you know, a car problem, you know, and all of a sudden they have to fix their car, there probably goes their food budget in a sense. So really, you know, when we talk about the root causes, you know, we're talking, and I don't even think this in of itself is going to solve the problem per se because it's so bad at this point. But, you know, we always talk about living wages. Now, you know, a lot of the people that are on food stamps, you know, or SNAP, you know, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program that used to be food stamps, the people who are on that, a lot of them are working poor. They're already working two jobs, three jobs to try to put food on the table. But, you know, they don't have set hours. They don't, you know, they don't have set hours. They don't get paid overtime. If they, you know, end up getting cut back for a couple of weeks, they tend to lose, they could lose their SNAP because they haven't been working for a while. So the program is really stacked against the people. And we're not looking to say, how do we make sure we fill in the gaps, make sure people aren't hungry? You know, we just sort of like, don't do that. But, you know, living wage jobs, and we're talking about serious living wage jobs, you know, a job that actually pays good health insurance, that pays a living wage, where somebody can go to work and come home and feed their family and pay for their rent and pay, you know, and take care of their basic needs. So we're talking living wage jobs. We're talking about affordable health care, maybe single payer, universal, whatever the answer is, but health care that people can afford. We're talking about, I did say affordable housing, right? No, I said living wage jobs, affordable housing. We have to have housing that people can afford to live in. So all of their income, 50%, is not going towards paying their rent. And so those are like the basic types of things, which is some way why we as Hunger Action Network are very into the concept of the human right to food, housing, healthcare, that everybody actually deserves the dignity to at least have those staples, and they shouldn't just be for the wealthy who can afford it. So it's like, how do you create that dignity for people to be able to, you know, certain people are going to have problems. We know that, you know, there's people with problems, you know, that maybe you can't get to, but generally most people want to work. They want to take care of their family. They want to be able to do what they have to do. You know, we just make it harder and harder for them, and we stack the odds against them. Transportation, things like that.
Well, you mentioned that among many issues in terms of economic justice, you want to create it, you know, treat it as a human right. I know you recently, Hunger Action Network has, you know, launched an effort to deal with hunger as a human right. How would you, you know, actually make that you know, sort of relevant to normal person's life?
You know, it's an interesting question because in a way that's a little hard for people to sort of grasp. But, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt did the Declaration of Human Rights. And in that, they have a phrase, freedom from want, which means, you know, the freedom to not want food, health care, housing. You know, again, the basic human rights, you know, that we all should have, you know, that gives us a life and dignity. And it's an interesting concept because America is one of the only two countries in the world that have not adopted this. And where this makes a difference is in England, food banking is basically a new concept. You know, they started food banks about 2003. But because they look at hunger through the lens of food as a human right, freedom from want, they basically don't feel that food banks providing food to people in need is basically helping people to live in dignity. So they're looking at it from a different prism of how do we solve this problem. So they're looking to actually get rid of food banks, even though they've only had them since 2003, but they're not looking to grow them into a big business almost like they are in America. They're looking to get rid of them and find a way to solve the problem. So even if it means giving people money instead of food so people can go into the supermarket and buy their own food, that gives them the dignity, you know, of not facing hunger as opposed to standing on a pantry line, you know, and going in with somebody standing next to them as they pick their foods, you know, and count their points kind of thing. So, you know, the way I guess I would phrase the human right to food concept or, you know, food is a human right, is that basically you look at a prism. So like most recently with the past Congress that we had that's about to change come January, the House Republicans were looking to impose work sanctions on people and, you know, more work sanctions that are already there. And
we're talking about in the SNAP program?
Yeah, exactly. What used to be food stamps, which is now SNAP. And they were trying to impose work programs on people. At the end of the day, the truth was they were already working. And if they weren't working, they were taking care of a young child, or they were taking care of an elderly parent, or they were taking care of a disabled person, or for whatever reason, it was not possible for them to get work. People are not scamming the system. The truth of the matter is, Congress has done over 24 to 25, if not more, hearings on the SNAP program, and it's been proven over and over again. And I've been told this by Republican congressional people over and over again. It is the best run program, a federal program that there is. So this belief that there's all this, you know, like, you know, malfeasance with the program is not true. So when the Republicans were looking to take food stamps away from people if they didn't meet the work requirements or do the paperwork that needed to be done, which was very onerous, they would take them off of food stamps. Now, where are they going to get their food? They're going to face hunger, and there's going to be problems. If you look at it through the human right to food, you know, you would say, okay, we want to make sure people are, quote, working. We want to make sure, you know, that it's not being misused, which it's not, but at the end of the day, if we end up taking the food stamps away, how are we going to assure a person has food on the table because they have the right to food and they have the right not to face hunger? So again, it's how you approach it. If you buy into the concept, which I basically understand, most Americans believe that nobody should go hungry, okay? The question is, should the government pay for the people who are facing hunger or not? But we all agree people shouldn't be hungry. So if we buy into the concept of the human right to food, how do we solve the problem to make sure nobody faces hunger? You know, and if we don't think the government should do it, how are you going to make sure that other people are picking up, you know, picking up the pieces? So that's sort of how
So we only have a minute left. Sure. So if people want more information about Hunger Action, we're talking to Susan Zimmet, executive. How do they find out about Hunger Action? And if you had that 30-second elevator ride with Governor Cuomo, what would you tell him to do this year?
I would basically tell Governor Cuomo that at this point in time that, you know, the low-income people in New York really need to be paid attention to. The richest of the rich have already gotten taken care of in Washington. They're already getting their major tax cuts. They're already buying more fancy planes and whatever. And we're at a point now where, you know, hunger and homelessness is just getting worse. And we need to really, like, redirect our attentions to what we need to do to take care of these issues on the front end. Because if we don't, we're paying for them on the back end with jails and diabetes and Medicaid and all that kind of stuff. So let's put our priorities in perspective. Let's put our budget, you know, at, you know, where it needs to be. Let's take care of the real problems. Let's do right by all New Yorkers.
And it's still hungeractionnys.org for the website?
Yes, it is. It is hungeractionnys.org, and we have a brand new website that's, you know, we're very, very, very proud of, and we actually just made a change yesterday, you know, that talks about our New Hope budget for next year. And it talks about the person we just honored, you know, for our Human Rights Award. And it's go to the website and look at it.
And this has been Susan Zimmett, Executive Director, Hunger Action Network of New York State. And this is from Mark Dunley for WOOC.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Monday, December 3rd, the Caro Town Board meeting will be held at 7 p.m. at Caro Town Hall. Then, on Tuesday, the 4th, the Catskill Town Board meeting will be held at 6:30 p.m. at Catskill Town Hall with live web stream on WGXC.org. On Wednesday, December 5th, the Greenville Planning Board meeting starts at 7 p.m. at Greenville Pioneer Town Hall. The Ghent Planning Board meeting will be held at Ghent Town Hall, also starting at 7 p.m. Then, on Thursday, December 6th, the Historic Hudson Boat Restoration and Sailing Society is holding a volunteer rally from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library. Hudson Valley composer Bobby Previte leads a conceptual performance called Blueprints at 8 p.m. in Catskill at Hilo. And the Caro Planning Board meeting begins at 7 p.m. at Caro Town Hall. Join us Friday, December 7th, for Rally in the Valley presents a benefit concert featuring the national and other local musicians from 7 to 8 p.m. in Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House. Explore the night sky through telescopes following a discussion on the effects of light pollution on wildlife in Desert Under the Stars at 7 p.m. at Edmund Niall Hoyt Preserve in Rensselaerville. Peter Aaron and Bill Brovald play Hilo in Catskill starting at 8:30 p.m. Chris Smither will have a live performance at Club Helsinki Hudson beginning at 9 p.m. And then on Saturday the 8th, Palatine Manor in Germantown is hosting a holiday bazaar from 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Volume presents its annual home team event, a special night of emerging local talent from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., featuring Kate Hewitt, Anna Victoria, Danny French, Geneva Zane, and Karen Crumley Keats at Spotty Dogs and Ale on Warren Street in Hudson. A multimedia performance of Peace Be With You, Letters from Rap with the Music Now Unit starts at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy. The Twang Busters will be performing live along with swing dance lessons at Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts, beginning at 7:30 p.m. And finally, on Sunday the 9th, author reading and book signing of The Legacy of Anne Frank by Gillian Walms Perry at 4 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library. And a live performance by Miss Sherry Vine starts at 8 p.m. at Club Helsinki Hudson. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org and clicking on the calendar link at the top of the page. Tune in holiday specials this December on WGXC. At noon, Friday, December 14th, the annual Rockin' Ray Palmer Christmas Show is on live. Rockin' Ray Palmer returns to the WGXC Hudson studio, taking requests and playing Christmas favorites. At 7 p.m. Saturday, December 22nd, tune on for composer Phil Klein's Unsilent Night, performed live on the streets of Hudson. Find out more at WGXC.org or unsilentnight.com. At 5 p.m. Christmas Eve, tune in a holiday mass live from the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. All day Christmas Eve, December 24th, WGXC tunes in special NORAD reports at the top of the hour, tracking Santa's progress around the world. Podcasts get made locally at WGXC.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Next,
it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Saugerties band The Rough Shapes played their surf rock December 1st at High Low in Catskill, and here's what the opening song sounded like.
We did a record a couple of years ago with our friend Brian Goss. This is one of those songs from that record.
Have these reports.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Susan Zemet, who is the executive director of the Hunger Action Network of New York State. Obviously, the holiday season is when many New Yorkers begin to think about the issue of hunger. But, you know, Susan, how is the not only issue of hunger in New York, but how is it, you know, sort of changing over time?
Well, unfortunately, I don't know if it's really changed for the positive. If you think about when the emergency feeding programs were first started all these years ago, they were there to take care of a problem, you know, and create emergency feeding programs. So when people had emergencies, they would go to a pantry and there would be food for them. However, here it is all these years later, and all of a sudden the food pantries and the food banks and the anti-hunger movement is a big business for all intents and purposes. I mean, you've got a lot of food banks getting a lot of money, giving out a lot of food. And so what started off as emergency feeding programs is now almost like the supermarket for the low income and hungry. And, you know, that's not a good situation at all. And part of the reason, I would say, which is really the value of Hunger Action Network, is the fact that it's like you have to get to the root cause of the problem. Why are people hungry?
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.